So my name is Lenore Norgard. Welcome, everyone. Some of you I know, some of you I don't, but I'm glad everyone is here. I'm a longtime shamanic practitioner. I have been teaching and doing healing work since 1992, about 22 years, and I've been on a shamanic path since 1987. I am going to be talking tonight about surgery, hospitals, and shamanism, optimizing healing. And I want to say, by way of introducing myself, that in addition to being a shamanic healer and teacher, I'm also an artist. I'm a writer and filmmaker. I'm currently working on a film project called American Ubuntu. I'm also an active citizen. I combine shamanism with activism. And I'm further a former journalist. So I've also published some articles about my work. Tonight, I'm going to start with an invocation. Then I'm going to speak very briefly about the nature of shamanic healing. And I'll tell you my story of an injury I had this winter and both my allopathic kind of ordinary reality experience of healing and how I utilize shamanism to enhance that. Thanks, people, for sending in your questions. There'll also, I hope, be time for a Q&A. So let's just start with an invocation. I want you to consider that even though we're not in a room together, even though we are separated by miles in different states across the country, even one caller from Europe, that we are nevertheless a circle. And so I'd like us all to just take a minute to close our eyes and start with taking a couple of deeper breaths and just centering ourselves. And as you take those deeper breaths, just take some breath and bring it into your heart. By breathing into your heart, you can expand your heart space and bring yourself out of what we're often in a mind trap in our culture. And by bringing your breath into your heart, when we do that, we can bring ourselves into a heart space. So I invite everyone to do some breathing through your heart. And now I'd like to invite you to imagine our circle across many time zones and to just reach out both of your hands and take two others' hands in yours so we can form a circle outside of space and time. And if you would just hold those hands over the course of this invocation, that would be wonderful. So at this time, I want to invite the compassionate spirits to be with us tonight. I'd like to invite our compassionate ancestors who gave us the precious gift of life to be with us, please, and hold us in your love. I want to remember all the beings of the earth. I want to remember the elementals, the mountains, the valleys, the soil, all the creepy crawly ones under and in the earth. I want to remember the waters of all kinds, from our teardrops to our blood to the vast oceans and the underground rivers, and the rain and the clouds and the glaciers, and all the beings that live in the water. Let's also remember all the green and rooted sisters and brothers of the plant world. And let us remember the element of fire, both within our earth and in our sky in the form of the sun. Remembering that the fire burns within the hearts of all living things. And let us remember also the air and the wind, the weather, all the beings of the air, all that fly, all that float on the air drafts. And let us remember Pachamama, the earth, of which we are all a part. So we bless and remember all our relations. We ask for the blessings of you all, for our circle tonight, And we ask that you guide us with your wisdom and your love so we can all achieve deeper wisdom and healing. And lastly, I just welcome the circle and thank you all for being here. And at this time, we can drop hands, and if you wish, you can open your eyes, or if you want to just listen with your eyes closed, whatever's comfortable for you. So as I said, I'm going to start with sharing my story. But before I do, I want to say a bit about shamanism because I know there are people on the call with a whole variety of backgrounds. Some of you have a lot of shamanic experience and some of you may have none. I'll just say very briefly that shamanism is not a religion. It's a spiritual practice, and it's the oldest spiritual practice known to humanity. It goes back at least 40,000 years, and now anthropologists are saying perhaps 100,000 years. In any case, it undergirds all contemporary ways of knowing, from the arts to religion to science. But it's not a belief system. It's a set of practices. It's a way to connect with the unseen world in order to receive guidance and wisdom, spiritual power and healing to enhance our life in this reality. And so when I talk about surgery, hospitals, and shamanism, I'm talking about how those practices can help us to optimize healing in situations where we're facing surgery in hospitals. And as I said, I'll be drawing on my own story of healing to do that. I also want to speak briefly about what shamanic healing is. Some of you are familiar with that. Some of you are not. Shamanic healing is a form of spiritual healing. So in shamanic healing, we're addressing the spiritual level of being. And in shamanism, healing means to increase wholeness, harmony, and balance. And so it's quite different from contemporary notions of curing in medicine, which is more about the cessation of symptoms and restoring somebody, if possible, to the state they were in before the illness or the injury. In healing, shamanic healing, we go much deeper and we're looking at how can we create more connection with our deepest selves on a soul level. How can we identify, transform, and remove any obstacles to preventing that deepening and to work, getting the soul and the mind and the body to work together in a unified, harmonious, balanced way. That way we can go even deeper in our experience of health and our connection with the universe. So I, over the course of my shamanic practice of more than 20 years, I've worked with a great many people with physical issues, mostly people with illness, but also people who have suffered injuries. And I do my work, as I say, on a spiritual level. That's the level that I address. And by working at the spiritual level, it can affect, of course, the other levels of being, such as the psychological, the emotional, and the physical bodies. So I've seen some really amazing things take place with shamanic healing and how it affects people physically as well as emotionally and psychologically and spiritually. I want to say a little bit about illness versus injury. You know, illness is something that tends to develop over time, even if we're not aware of its development. We may discover it after it's been developing for quite a long time. It might involve infection. It might involve, you know, always involve some kind of imbalance, at least on the physical level. But there's also often a spiritual manifestation of that infection or imbalance. And there are a lot of different ways that might be addressed. It really depends on how my spirits guide me to work with it. It might be removing spiritual energy that doesn't belong to the person or doesn't serve them. It might be recovering a lost connection to spirit power. It might be recovering parts of the person that have split off and that by missing part of their vital essence, they've become ill. So that's a little bit about a shamanic view of illness, very, very brief. Injury is something a little different. It's something that typically happens in a totally unexpected way, and we experience it usually as something external, something that happens to us. Of course, we all know that we can play a role in becoming injured, but sometimes we don't. Sometimes it just happens. Either way, there can be spiritual elements to the injury and to the recovery from the injury. One of the things about a shamanic perspective on illness is that in indigenous cultures, when someone is ill, it's never seen as an individual matter. It's always seen as a community matter. So an individual problem never belongs to one person. It's always an indication that something's out of balance in the village. And so in the course of healing some imbalance, then the shaman would look at what's out of balance in the village, and you know, other people could be involved in healing that. The question is, how can the person be brought into connection, into balance, into harmony and wholeness? With an injury, I think that even though it may possibly not involve an overt imbalance, it's still an opportunity to look at why did the injury happen, see if there's anything to learn there may or may not be, and also to look at the opportunity in the course of healing from the injury to heal other things. So here's my story about my injury. You know, I'm someone who's been really blessed with excellent health over the course of my life. I come from a family where there was quite a lot of illness, and so I witnessed it firsthand, you know, a lot of physical suffering. As I say, I physically didn't experience that. My wounds were more emotional and psychological wounds from that kind of trauma. But physically, I was really blessed to be very healthy. You know, I would see other people, you know, receive wounds and have stitches, you know, people having surgery for various things. And I had never, until this winter, I'd never had a stitch. I'd never had broken anything. I did have a minor fracture of a bone in my foot about 10 years ago, but, you know, it was so minor. It's more like a sprain and was, you know, easy to heal. But what happened this winter was I was in Chicago. I was there for two purposes. One was to meet with a new filmmaker friend who I was hoping to see about collaborating and getting some help with getting my own film project advanced. And the other was to reconnect with someone who had been very important in my very, very early adulthood. It was someone who I co-parented when I was about 18 years old. I met when I was 18 and she was 3. And I was a key parental figure in her life for about 5 years, and less so later. And I hadn't seen her in 20 years. So both the meetings were very important. I was there about 6 days. That was what was planned. And both went really great. I got to meet Angela's, that's the young woman I co-parented. I got to meet her whole family, her husband, her children, her new grandchild even. And the meeting with the filmmaker was extremely positive, very, very productive. So I was in a really great kind of blissed out state a few hours before I was to get on my plane to come home. And so I was staying with Angela's family out in the suburbs of Chicago. You might remember it was a pretty harsh winter, but that day was really beautiful. There was sun. You know, there had been melting of some of the snow. There was still snow and ice about, but it had melted some. And so I thought, you know, I'm just going to go out and take a walk in this suburban neighborhood and just be outside, because I haven't really been outside because the weather hadn't been good. So I went out, this little West Coast girl went out walking, and I was blissed out and hadn't been walking around snow and ice in a really long time, and I slipped on some ice. And when I caught myself, I did catch myself I slipped with my right foot, caught myself with my left foot, but then I started falling forward, and what happened was that my foot was forced up against, you know, towards my shin in an unnatural way. And I thought, oh, my God, this is not good. And, of course, it really hurt. And so I fell back onto my back. But I was in a suburb. I was alone. There was nobody around. And I was in shock. And I tried to call Angela. I had my phone with me. Her phone was turned off. She was at work. And so I thought, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? And I was in shock, so I wasn't, you know, real alert. But eventually I saw a mail carrier passing by and called over to him. And then a woman came out of a house and saw us and him trying to help me and came over. And she called an ambulance. So I'm glad she wasn't in shock and she was able to sort that out, because I wasn't even thinking about an ambulance. So I get to the ER, and they treated me very well. I was very fortunate. They ran x-rays, and the doctor told me that I had fractured both of my ankle bones on my left foot, and that this kind of break usually required surgery, but that I might not have to have it because of the position. And so he put me in a splint and grounded me for 2 days. He said, you can't fly for 2 days, but you need to see a surgeon in 2 to 4 days. So I ended up back at Angela's house, and it was really interesting. You know, this was one of the first things that happened, was that after these years, you know, our positions were really reversed. I had nurtured her and cared for her as a young child, and here I was injured, and here she was nurturing me and taking care of me. It was really very touching and really a gift, even though I was in quite a bit of pain, and then I got drugged up because of the pain. But, you know, she helped me with everything, and also her family did, until I was able to get on the plane to come back west. So once I got back here, it was a question of finding a surgeon. I had a new insurance plan since the ACA was passed, but I didn't have a primary care provider, so I had to just navigate a lot of hoops with the insurance. I won't go into all that. If you have questions about it, we can talk about it, but that's kind of more ordinary reality stuff that doesn't relate so much to shamanism. But I did get in to see a podiatric surgeon about 3 days after I got back, and it was very interesting because I saw his photograph in the lobby, and I kind of freaked out because he looked like he was about 25 years old. And I thought, oh, my God, you know, I want somebody experienced, you know, to look at this and tell me what I, you know, tell me their perspective of what I need to do. And, of course, for me, I was really hoping not to have surgery. I had no interest in having surgery. I'd never had it, didn't want to have it. And I've always been very attached to using as much natural medicine as I can, and, you know, herbs rather than drugs. And so I had my heart set on avoiding surgery, but while I was waiting in the lobby and commenting to the receptionist about the apparent, you know, youth of this physician, she said something very wise. She said, well, he's good. And then she said, look, she said, you know, my son had an accident and had to have emergency surgery on his hand, and the only person available was a general orthopedic surgeon. She said, I would have so much rather that he had a hand surgeon, but there wasn't one available, and the surgery had to be done right away. She said, you're really lucky you're seeing a foot and ankle surgeon. I thought, well, that's true. So I met with a surgeon, and he was young. I wasn't 25, but he might have been 26 or 27. But he was very respectful, and, you know, surgeons are not noted for their warmth, but I would say for a surgeon that he had very good manners, very respectful and caring. And, you know, he knew I didn't want to have surgery, and he said, I'm going to show you the x-rays and why it's mandatory. He said, there really is not a choice in this matter. It's just no choice. He said, if you don't have it, you're going to have long-term real problems. And so that was really hard for me. I really didn't want to have surgery. I'd been clinging on to what the ER doctor had told me. But what he said made a lot of sense to me. So at the end of the time with him, gave me his card. He said, look, I know this is a lot to take in. I know you're going to have questions. I'm going to schedule the surgery for, this was a Thursday, I'm going to schedule it for next Wednesday. He said, I want you to be comfortable going into the surgery, so I want you to have all your questions answered. So here's my card. Call me, and I will answer your questions. I thought that was pretty amazing. And later I realized that I probably wouldn't, it's quite possible I wouldn't have gotten that from somebody who was much more established, that in part because he was young, he was doing that. That's my guess. In any case, I went home and kind of in shock the second time at the prospect of imminent surgery. And I called my naturopath, and he said, well, you might want to get a second opinion. So I started looking around for a second opinion. In the meantime, I called my shamanic friends, and I said, would you please journey about the surgeon and tell me whether he can help me to heal my ankle? And so I had three different people journey about the surgeon, and one of them said, yes, he's adequate. One of them said, well, he's not a healer. You know, he's good at what he does, but he's not a healer. And I said, you know, I don't need my surgeon to be a healer. You all can be my healers, you know, or I, you know, can find other people for that part. What I need is somebody who's really good at surgery if I'm going to have surgery. And so everybody got a green light on him. I did a little online research about him. I couldn't find a lot, but I did find out that trauma surgery was kind of his specialty and limb salvaging. And I thought, well, that's good. And so I did call him. I called him with a lot of questions. I called him twice, and both times he spent a whole half hour on the phone with me. I thought that was amazing. He answered every one of my questions. He never balked at any of my questions. He never refused to answer any of them or was in any way disrespectful. He was very caring. And by the time I finished talking with him and got the feedback from my shamanic friends, I thought, I don't need a second opinion. At this point, what I need to do is to build my relationship with the surgeon and build my confidence with him and get aligned with him rather than second-guessing. You know, I have enough affirmation that he at least can do an adequate and probably a good job for me. And since I don't want to delay the surgery and I need to get on with it, I'm going to focus on building my relationship with him and getting ready for this surgery. So, let me look at my notes here. So the surgery was scheduled, and one of my dear shamanic friends in an ongoing circle, she offered to do a ritual for me before the surgery in order to get things lined up for the surgery to be have a successful outcome. And I thought that was so wonderful. And I said, thank you so much for doing that for me. And so my shamanic circle met without me and did this ritual to get the surgery lined up right. I also had another person in that circle who wasn't present for the ritual. He was out of town, but he took the time to talk with me by phone a couple times. And he told me about a shamanic friend of his who had had something like 24 surgeries. This guy had been in a head-on auto collision some years before and had to have, I think it was like 24 surgeries. And the incredible thing was that he was fine at the end of the 24 surgeries, and that, but he said he kind of learned how to do surgery in the course of that, how to optimize it. And one of the things that he found was that if he could listen to music while he was under a general anesthesia and a surgery was taking place, that his recovery rate was cut in half. And I thought, wow, that's awesome. And he said, what I kind of surmised was that he would listen to the music privately. It would be like on headphones. And so he wouldn't hear what was happening in the surgical room. He wouldn't hear what they were doing in their conversation. And, you know, surgeons and surgical teams are kind of notorious for having very interesting conversations during surgery. And, of course, also things can go wrong during surgery, and they have to deal with that. So my understanding was that the point of the music was to screen that out and go into another place, and because even though you're under general anesthesia, you do take in what's happening in the room on another level, and it will affect your consciousness around what's happening in the surgery and post-operative healing. And so by listening to music and not hearing what's happening in the surgical room, you optimize your recovery. So I thought that was really interesting and really smart. So I put that on my list of things I was going to do. I also had been following the healing process of another colleague, Claude Poncelet, who's a physicist, who had a rare kind of cancer and was undergoing some treatments, and shared about his process. And he talked a lot about working to harmonize with the allopathic medicine and working with the various spirits of the different modalities he was encountering. And this other man who'd had the 24 surgeries, you know, also did work like that. And so I made up my mind that I was going to do everything I could to harmonize with this process to enhance my healing. So in the meantime, I found myself very dependent on friends. And I'm someone, those of you who know me may know or have the impression, I'm a pretty independent person. I like that. I like taking care of myself. I'm used to taking care of other people. And suddenly I was in a position where I became quite dependent on others. You know, I don't know if you've ever been on crutches, but it was my second time on crutches, and when you're on, I knew I wouldn't even be able to carry a cup of tea across the room. And so that's a pretty high degree of dependency. I couldn't put any weight whatsoever on my left foot, so I just was having to lie down all the time and depend on others for my most simple needs. I think actually for those of us who are kind of hyper-independent, it's actually a really, really good, can be a really good experience and part of the healing process to surrender to that dependency. That was certainly true for me. Let's see, so The surgeon, again, was very kind. He said, I'm going to schedule the surgery as early as I can because you won't be able to eat and I don't want you to be hungry. I thought that was so sweet. And the hospital did the intake over the telephone, and one of the things they asked me was about religious preference. And for those of you who practice shamanism, if you don't have a religion, it can be a little bit of a curveball, like, well, what do I say? They did ask me if I wanted a chaplain, if I wanted a chaplain to visit me. And I said, well, is that like non-denominational? And they said, oh, yes, you know, it's no particular religion. I said, well, that would be nice. Because I thought, you know, all the help I can get, all the support I can get, that's for the best, especially spiritual support. So I said, yes, that would be great, have the chaplain stop by. But that I didn't have anything else, any other requests along that line. The day before the surgery, all of a sudden I realized that I wanted to get the surgeon a gift. You know, that is something that's traditional in indigenous cultures, is to bring the healer a gift. And you may also bring them payment, but there's also a gift element. And I thought, oh my goodness, I want to give the surgeon a gift before the surgery, before he does this work for me. And then I thought, oh, he's going to have a whole team. What about the team? And so I called him, and I actually asked him how many people were on the team. And he told me. He listed them all out, you know, the anesthesiologist, the first nurse, can't remember, but it was about 8 or 10 people. It was a big team. So I thought, oh, I should get gifts for all of them. Oh, and I should get cards. And so my friend took me out the night before the surgery to get some gifts. And, you know, being injured, I couldn't work, so I was also facing with a shortfall in income. And so I didn't have a lot of money to spend on gifts, but I wanted to get something nice. I wanted to get something that would express my appreciation and really in a gracious way. But I didn't know the surgeon, what his tastes were, let alone these people I'd never met on the surgical team. So I thought, well, I better not get alcohol, because maybe they don't drink alcohol, and I could get food, but what do they eat, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe they don't eat sugar, maybe they don't eat gluten. You know, it's really complicated. And so we went to the store, and I was fortunate to find some really, really, really lovely things in a dessert case that were fruit and chocolate And so anybody could have had the fruit. Somebody liked chocolate, they could have the chocolate. But the thing was, they were very beautiful and within my budget. So I bought an assortment of those things, and then I was going to get cards for all of them, and then I got really overwhelmed. I thought, okay, I'll just write one card. So I was really pleased that I had my gifts, and when I checked in at the hospital, no, wait, I have to back up before I went to the hospital. I was supposed to check in at the hospital at 6:30 in the morning, so my ride was coming at 6 o'clock, but I woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I made a journey to my ankle, because one of the things that can happen in surgery, there's a couple things that can happen shamanically in a surgery. One is that in a general anesthesia, which is what I was going to have, and when, you know, the body is being cut, it is a kind of a trauma. And so you can suffer from soul loss in that. You know, and then you can also have, so you can have general soul loss where part of your soul splits off due to the trauma of the surgery and the general anesthesia dissociating you. And you can also have soul loss from the part of the body that's being immediately traumatized. So I could have soul loss already in my ankle from the trauma of the injury. I could have further soul loss from the surgery itself in my ankle. And you really want that life force in that injured area so that the healing can be sound. So I wanted to do everything I could to prevent any kind of soul loss. And so I journeyed to my ankle with the intention of reassuring it that this was fine and wanting it to harmonize with the metal that was going to be implanted to shore up the injury. And it was so interesting because I was going to reassure my ankle, but when I got to the spirit of my ankle was just so happy. My ankle was overjoyed about the surgery. My ankle was like, "We need help. Oh, thank God we're going to have surgery. Thank God we're going to have metal in here so that we can heal." So that was really interesting and, you know, really wonderful for me. It put me even more at ease about the surgery and that it was the right thing and that I was going to have harmony, you know, with my body on both the spiritual and physical level going into the surgery. So then I wrote the card. You know, I hadn't really thought about what I would write in the card, but it all came out. I wrote in the card, I said, you know, "Dear surgeon and team," I used his name, I said, "thank you so much for fixing my ankle." I said, "I'm looking forward to being fully restored and being able to run and jump and doing my full yoga set." And I said, "I know it'll take a while, no pressure." And then I said, "I know that each and every one of you is crucial to the outcome of the surgery. And, you know, the surgeon has instilled confidence in me that this is the right thing to do and that it will be successful. And I want you to know that I'm grateful to every single one of you for the role that you're playing, the essential roles that you're playing. And I also want you to know that I consider myself part of the team and that I will do everything I can to be in harmony with you. You know, here are some gifts in gratitude." So I was very happy with my card. It felt really right. And I set off for the hospital. I was checking in my wheelchair. And I said, you know, they asked me in my intake over the phone whether I had any religious requests or preferences. And I said, you know, something I didn't mention is that in my tradition, we give the healer a gift before they do the work. And so I have some gifts here for the surgical team. I want to find a way to present them prior to the surgery. And I was told that there would be a meeting with the surgical team prior to the surgery. So I wonder if I can get into that meeting room ahead of time and set this up. And they're like, "Oh, yeah, you know, talk to them when you get into that point at the pre-op bay," whatever. I was like, okay. So I get in there, and like I say, I was totally newbie at this. You know, I know there are a lot of people that signed up for this call who had surgical experiences, but in case you haven't, or in case my experience was different from yours, they have this pre-op area where you have a bed with a curtain around the room, around the bed. So there's several beds in a row with curtains around them, so you have some privacy. And that's just where they put you until they're ready to give you the anesthesia. And then it turned out that there's no meeting with the surgical team, that just the team members are supposed to come by and introduce themselves prior to the surgery so you know who they are. So I thought, oh, okay, well, I'll set up my gifts here. There's a little table beside my bed. And so I was setting them up. My friend had given me a plastic imitation crystal tray. So it was really beautiful. I was very pleased putting my little treats there and getting my card ready for them to read. And a nurse peeked her head and said, what have you got there? She said, you can't have food in here because, you know, you can't eat before surgery. And I said, oh, it's not for me. I'm not going to eat. It's not for me. I said, believe me, I'm very committed to this surgery. I'm not going to eat anything. Well, what's it for? I said, well, it's for the surgical team. And she's like, well, that's sweet. Well, okay. But then 5 minutes later, another nurse came in and said, you cannot have that here. It's against the regulations. Sorry. And so I explained to her again what it was for. She said, okay, here, I am going to put it in the refrigerator in the surgical area, and I will tell them it's there. I said, okay. I just had to surrender. You know, it was one of the things that I had to do over and over again through this process was to just let go. And so I thought, okay, you know, I've completed my intention with this. I'm doing my best, and I can't control that. So I just surrendered it. So she took it away. The surgeon came by to check in with me. I told him, I said, I got you all some gifts. They're in the refrigerator. I said, and there's a card. I said, the card's important. I'd like you to read it before the surgery. He said, okay. You know, a couple other people came in. I told them the same thing. And then the anesthesiologist came. Oh, I need to tell you that I talked to the surgeon about the music. And he said, oh, well, that's up to the anesthesiologist. I said, well, admitting told me it was up to the surgeon. And I said, let me tell you why I want to do it. I said, you know, I learned from this other person that it can cut recovery time in half. And he was like, oh, well, let's try it then. So it was kind of cool. And again, I think he had a certain openness because of his youth about trying things. And so he was all up for it. Then the anesthesia. So I had my iPod, I had my earbuds, I had made myself a playlist that felt appropriate to me, kind of music I would want to hear. And then the anesthesiologist came, introduced himself, and started in. And I didn't know how that all worked, but he said, "Oh, you can't have that iPod in there." And I said, "Well, the surgeon said I can." "No, you can't have that." He said, "There, you know, there's lawsuits about hearing loss in surgery from this and that." He said, "You can't have that." And so I said, "You know, I feel like you're not really listening to me." And so he stopped, and I said, "This is why I want to do it." I said, "I don't want to hear anything in this." "Oh, you won't hear a thing. You're going to be under. You won't hear anything." It was amazing to me that, you know, somebody with that profession who was older didn't know that you could actually hear things on a subconscious level, even though you're fully anesthetized. So I didn't argue that point with him. I just said, look, I said, for the sake of the discussion, let's say I can hear something in the surgical room. I want this to be so that I can't hear it. And he tried again to tell me I wouldn't hear anything. He said, well, look, he said, it's not going to happen. We're not going to allow that in here. He said, do you want to cancel the surgery and have it somewhere else? Well, that didn't seem like a viable option at all to me at that point. I'd come this far. He said, you know, we can play music out in the room, but you can't have headphones. You can't have earbuds. So, I had to surrender at that point. I had asserted myself, did my best, just like with the gifts, and then I had to surrender. So I did. So he started putting me under, and the next thing I knew, I was coming to in the hospital room, and my surgeon was there very shortly after I came to, and he said, everything went fine. He said, everything went great. He said, I took an x-ray afterwards. He said, everything's exactly where I want it. Everything is perfect. So, of course, I was ecstatic to hear that. And he said, here's your iPod. He said, you got to have music, but only for about half the surgery. I thought, oh, that's better than none. And he said, Oh, and he said, thank you for the gifts. He said, I just want you to know, I took it into the pre-op room with the whole team, and I read your card out loud to the whole team prior to the surgery. I just want you to know that. I was so moved by that, that he had taken that to heart and done that. So that was a story of the surgery. The chaplain never came, so I never got the chaplain, but fortunately I had my support, you know, from my shamanic team. Looking at my notes here. So, you know, I'll just say on an ordinary reality level that I utilized a lot of complementary medicine in my recovery. I utilized acupuncture, appropriate drugs and herbs. You know, I had splints and casts and crutches, then a walker, then a walking boot. I think I mentioned acupuncture at home health care, homeopathy. I had some body work, you know, to try to, you know, once the cast was off, because my muscles had atrophied and it was really important for, you know, them to be stimulated and, you know, work with the muscle or the scar tissue, et cetera, et cetera. So I was very, very conscientious about using as many ordinary modalities as I could and, you know, really following the directions I got and also really informing myself about what was happening so that I could be as proactive as I could. And I think that my surgeon really saw that and really respected it, and that, you know, that's why, I think that's partly why he bothered to read the card to the staff. You know, he could see how much I was going to be an active participant in this process and take responsibility. So I want to talk about some of the things that I learned. I'm kind of, I will say that my my shamanic circle did a lot of work for me over the months. They did ongoing work, you know, drumming for my healing. I have one shamanic friend. I was very concerned because after the surgery, you know, I'd never had a general anesthesia before, and I felt like I came back okay. I didn't feel like I had any general soul loss, but the thing that was very odd to me was that I felt really dissociated from my ankle and foot. Like, there was no pain, and that felt really strange to me, you know, that I had been cut open, had metal put into my ankle and my bones, you know, it was pretty traumatic. And yet there was no pain. And so that felt like another dissociation, like how can I reconnect with my ankle and my foot? So I thought I had soul loss in my ankle and foot. So I asked one of my shamanic friends and colleagues if she would do a soul retrieval for my ankle. And she did, and it was fantastic. I had an increase in pain. But for me, that was a good thing. That was a really reconnecting. And you know, the pain was manageable, but it was really, really important that the sole of my foot be present so that the healing could be speedy and be not develop any complications. If you have sole loss in a place where you've been injured from that part of the body, it can have difficulty healing correctly. That's the issue. It also can create a vacancy where spiritual intrusions can enter and create complications. So I wanted to head that off at the pass, and my friend and colleague did a beautiful ceremony for me and brought the sole of my ankle back. And also, I'm going to talk about some of the things that I learned and the gifts of this process for me. One was the gift of dependency, and as I said earlier, that's tough for me, but part of the reason it's tough is because I didn't get to have it for very long as a child. My mother became disabled when I was about 7 years old, and I became her caregiver, as well as for my siblings, and even for my father eventually, and so I didn't get to have that dependency from a very young age, and a shamanic friend took me into her home. She and her husband took me into her home and nursed me through my convalescence from this ankle. And, you know, I didn't really know them very well. I'd always liked her, but I hardly knew him at all. I'd met him maybe once. And, you know, she and I didn't know. I mean, we liked each other, but we didn't know each other. So for them to take me in was a very generous thing. They're retired. You know, they had the room and the space, but they're very kind and generous people. And that experience, you know, of them caring for me and doing it with so much love and care was very deeply healing for me, not just for my ankle, but for my soul. It was, so, you know, I just had to, like, open to that and surrender to it and allow it. You know, sometimes I cried more than once. And, you know, we all became very close. We're almost like family now. And although I live with them for, like, almost 3 months while I was convalescing. It took that long for me to get off the walker and the crutches and to be able to start caring for myself again, you know, in terms of being able to carry things across the room or cook or get around on public transit and that kind of thing. So that was really a very healing thing for me, was surrendering to my dependency and healing into the love of the people who were right there to care for me. I think it really healed some deep wounds from a long time ago. Another thing that was important was, you know, once I realized and, you know, what was happening and that I was going to have this surgery, I thought, well, you know, this is part of the human experience that I haven't had. And, you know, I'm going to open myself to that. You know, I've broken a bone. I've never done that before. And I'm going to have surgery and general anesthesia and be in a hospital. You know, a lot of my clients have been through this and my friends, and I haven't. So I'm going to learn more about being a human being, you know, in this society and this journey that so many people undertake. And, you know, I'm going to learn everything I can from it and, you know, be fully present to it. And so I really found that it was an opportunity to deepen myself and my experience of life and to take that into my work with others and to, you know, expand my compassion even more. And I thought, well, you know, I want everything to go in a particular way. I want to be fully healed and, you know, recover my full capacity, which the surgeon thought I could do. And I also need to accept the gift of this experience however it unfolds. So that comes to another point of, you know, surrendering to trust, you know, trusting others, you know, trusting the surgeon, trusting the surgical team, trusting the people taking care of me in the hospital, the physical therapist, not to mention, you know, the friends who I depended upon to care for me during my convalescence, and trusting in the spirits that they were, that, you know, the best possible outcome was going to occur on a spiritual level, and that I just needed to let go. So I'm sure all of you have had experience in your life where you've been forced to let go and know how it's ultimately such a healing experience. I think that the earlier we can let go, the better. You know, when we fight things and fight things and fight things, we kind of can make ourselves more miserable. So finding that moment when it's time to surrender and let go and you know, connect with the spirits, connect with our sources of spiritual support and our loved ones, and, you know, be proactive, do our part, and also let go. So here's some other things I learned. One is a really ordinary reality thing is the benefits of a young, fresh surgeon. Other people said to me, oh, he'll have the latest training. That'll be great. And I thought, yeah, but the latest isn't always the best. And but, you know, I realized he was open. He was pretty open. You know, I'd tell him different things I was trying. And I said, you know, I've got a lot of people working for me long distance, you know, spiritually. He's like, he was kind of like, well, knock yourself. He said, well, every little bit helps. I thought that was so sweet. I told him I was going to do acupuncture. He said, fine. I think he really appreciated how proactive I was. But also, because he was young, I felt like there was some openness and also that he was still really passionate about his work. He hadn't become jaded at all. I actually saw him become a little bit jaded over the months as he had to start navigating the insurance systems and, you know, not being able to do things the way he thought they should be done because it was going to entail more expense for the insurers. But still, you know, he was a very, passionate about his work and very caring. So maybe you all already knew that young surgeons can be a good thing, but I didn't. Another thing is what I've mentioned a number of times during this call is the importance of harmonizing as much as possible and with intention among all the aspects of the healing process, you know, using ceremony, using shamanic healing, using shamanic journeying. All these things can really help for all the aspects of your journey to be aligned and to be harmonious so that you can bring about the most wholeness possible. So again, ways I learned about ways to blend shamanism, natural medicine, and allopathic medicine. I always knew they all had their places. I always tell my clients, you know, with physical issues that come with to me because of physical issues, whether illness or injury, I always tell them, you know, okay, I can work with you on the spiritual aspect of this, and it's important that you also attend to the other aspects, you know, whether that's allopathic medicine or naturopathic medicine or psychotherapy. You know, there's different aspects to our healing journey, and I really believe it's important to attend to all of them. And to the extent that we can, if we can be very open with the different levels about who we are and what we're doing and show that we're being proactive, I think it really makes a huge difference. So I'm just going to review some things that you can do to optimize healing, and then I'll open this up to Q&A. And some of this will be more shamanic, and some of it will be more ordinary reality because I learned lessons about both in the course of my experience. First of all, I would say remember that whatever is happening to you, whether it's illness or injury, is part of a larger picture, both within yourself and you and the world and you and the cosmos. And explore that with openness and equanimity as much as you can. Be curious about it. Accept your situation and harmonize it rather than fight it. I mentioned that earlier, how important that is. You know, become as informed as you can about the ordinary reality situation you're in and make informed choices. Consult your spirits or find somebody who can consult their spirits for you or both, and get spiritual guidance about your situation. That could be, you know, through shamanic journeying, it could be through meditation, it could be through prayer, whatever works for you. And if you don't have a method that you use, you can just try getting quiet and asking a question from your heart and listening from your heart and see what you get. You can also allow yourself to seek guidance from a trusted spiritual guide, whether that's a pastor, a rabbi, or imam, a shamanic circle, or practitioner, your sangha, coven, or whatever it may be for you. Get ordinary reality support. Consider who you can turn to. It might be people that you wouldn't have thought of. That's what happened for me. Really open to yourself to that possibility. It can be a gift, you know, to let someone care for you. Surrender to that healing power of love and let go of any kind of damaging, rugged individualism about how you have to do this yourself or you want to do it yourself. Let yourself be cared for by others. That can be a very important part of the healing. Get spiritual healing support from your spirit allies, from your spiritual community, possibly a shamanic healer, and work on the spiritual side of healing your illness or injury. When you're working with medical folks, be in your heart as much as you can. Show your humanity, and they're more likely to show theirs. There are people in the medical community who are much, much, much more open than you can imagine to spiritual approaches to healing. They know. Let them know, be open with them about what you need in a way that they might understand. You might need to put it in different words. You know, maybe you don't say shamanism. You know, maybe you don't say spirits. Maybe you say God. You know, however you can say it so that you can have an open-hearted conversation with them about what you need. Harmonize from your heart with your body, your mind, your personal spirit allies, your community, and your medical providers. The more harmony you can create, the more harmonic of a field you can create around yourself and around your malady and for your healing journey, the more positive it's going to be on every level, from physical to emotional to spiritual to social. You know, as you're recuperating or on your healing journey, drop into your deepest self, because this is an opportunity for that. If your experience is anything like mine, you're going to have a lot of downtime. You're probably going to sleep a lot and lie around a lot. And, you know, honor everybody who's part of your healing journey in whatever capacity, in whatever reality, in whatever way seems right to you. Take responsibility for your healing and be proactive. You know, find out what are the things that you need to do or can do and do them. And rest. One of the hardest things for me was to accept that healing was going to take time. My shamanic circle, you know, their spirit allies kept telling them to tell me, you're going to heal fine, but it's going to take time. And I had to learn to embrace the gift of a different kind of time and pace than I was used to. And again, ultimately, that was very healing. So consider how you can use that downtime in a positive way. It could be simply to rest. It could be to dream. It could be to pray or to read or journey or enjoy loved ones, watch movies. Just remember to let go and that you can't control how long it takes to heal. Do ordinary things when you can. Be grateful for the small steps of improvement and celebrate every step of healing, because each one is a victory. For me, they were things like graduating from a walker to crutches, you know, being able to actually go up the stairs on my feet rather than on my butt, you know, being able to... Eventually, it was being able to put my regular shoe onto my injured foot after, you know, months of being in a splint, in a cast, a walking boot, and then the foot just being too swollen to fit into a shoe. The day it could was so great. Remember the gift of gratitude for the simple things that we take for granted every day. You know, when you are incapacitated like that, you know, for me, it was the, quote, simple gift of being able to walk, you know, or to be able to carry something in my hand, things we take for granted all the time. And, you know, I watched myself with each step of improvement. I'd start taking it for granted all over again. You know, I try to keep being grateful for all the amazing things my body can do. Remember that we live in a healing universe. The arc of the universe, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. said that the arc of the universe is long, but it's bent towards justice. And I would add that it's also bent towards healing. So open yourself to the healing that's being offered to you through your illness or your injury and through that healing journey. Surrender to it and open yourself to the mystery. Remember that healing is not about curing the physical body. It's about making the soul whole and letting it deepen. Physical bodies are incredible, and yet they are planned for obsolescence. Make peace with your vulnerability and mortality, and meet God, or whatever your take on the mystery is. Okay, that's the end of my talk. I am going to open this up for question and answer, or any comment that you want to make, or maybe you have something you want to add to what I've shared.
This is Kelly. I just wanted to say thank you.
Oh, you said Kelly?
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much, Kelly. Thanks for being on the call.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. There's someone here named Elsa. Elsa, is there anything that you would like to
can you hear me?
Add or ask?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I came in late, like 10 minutes past 7. Sorry about that, I came home late. And so I didn't want to say anything and interrupt you, so I stayed silent. Thank you for this beautiful rendering of your adventure. I'm so impressed by the shamanic part of it. A friend of mine, she once did a soul retrieval on me.
Uh-huh.
And I forget the details, but what I do remember is that she came up with a song for me. It was just a number of notes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I had to sing those, and my tears kept coming, and my tears kept coming. And I kept doing that till the tears didn't come anymore. I think that was a couple of weeks. So I think it was something from the war in Europe, you know.
Oh.
As a little girl. I can't remember the details. I have it written down somewhere. But so there I was very impressed with the soul retrieval.
Yes. Sounds like it was very deeply healing.
Yes. And another one with a shamanic circle, I had injured myself. I sprained my wrist sideways and backwards and my shoulder, you know, the whole misery. And so I called my shamanic, I wasn't the leader. I called the shamanic circle I was part of.
Uh-huh.
And they journeyed for me. And they said I had to put on comfrey. I had made comfrey tincture myself years ago because I had grown comfrey in my garden and I had an enormous piece of root and I made tincture of it and I didn't think of using it.
Uh-huh. Did you use it?
Yes, I used it and it was very helpful.
Oh, that's great.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I mean, that's... You know, I think sometimes people forget that the spirits can give us this kind of advice, you know, about physical things we can do. Like, you know, when I was checking out my surgeon even, you know, it's very, very useful. That's wonderful.
Yeah, and I've had more times, you know, that I asked the shamanic circle for an answer, and it was just amazing what came out.
Uh-huh.
I thought of, and it really worked, you know.
Right.
To be true. Yeah. Very impressive.
Great.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing this.
Thank you for sharing your experience. Thank you very much.
The microphone that works now.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to mute you again. Thank you, Elsa.
Thank you so much, Lore.
Is there anyone else who has anything that you want to ask or add to our conversation tonight? It's a little after 8, and I was planning about an hour, but we can go a couple more minutes if there's anything else. Okay, well, it looks like everyone who wanted to talk has talked. Let's do a devocation before we hang up and end the call. Oh, let's just stretch our hands out again and take hands across time and space. Close our eyes and take a couple of deeper breaths. And as we do so, let's give thanks for the compassionate spirits who've been with us tonight, compassionate ancestors who've given us the precious gift of life, the earth and the fire, the water and the air, and all the beings who are part of those elements. Pachamama, Mother Earth, who sustains us day in and day out, and the spirit of the circle and each and every one of you who's been part of the circle tonight. We thank all of you for coming, and we release you now as we close this circle for tonight. Thank you all for coming. Go in beauty, and I hope to cross paths with you again soon. Many blessings. Good night.